3:2 für Union nach 0:2 Rückstand. Ich muss mega kotzen. Man pendelt die Chance, weil er mit dem Rücken zum Tor geht.
Moin, Montag, 4. September 2017, schon wesentlich später als 19.10 Uhr, warum erfahrt ihr gleich. Ich bin Yannick und ihr hört eine Sonderfolge des Millerntons heute, denn ich habe mir heute zwei besondere Gäste eingeladen, die ebenfalls Fans des FC St. Pauli sind, allerdings 7000 Kilometer entfernt vom Millerntor wohnen. Und zwar mit Samantha und Sean vom Fell in Love with a Girl Podcast aus Kanada. Daher nehme ich auch erst fast in der Nacht auf und es wird logischerweise auch die erste Ausgabe des Millerntons auf Englisch sein. Bevor ich die beiden jetzt auch gleich begrüßen werde, hören wir noch das Intro ihrer eigenen Sendung. Es ist ein Ausschnitt aus einem Song der Pagans of Northumberland und danach kommt dann der angesprochene englische Teil und wir werden uns auch auf Englisch verabschieden. Viel Spaß! St. Pauli, we love you. And with these words, I want to welcome Samantha and Sean from the Fell in Love with a Girl podcast. Hello and moin to both of you.
Moin, moin.
Hi. So, I guess some of your audience, of our audience, already listened to your podcast. But for those of them who didn't, please introduce yourselves and who are you, where can we find you on the internet, and mainly, what makes a Canadian couple become fans of the FCSP and do a podcast about it?
Well, my name is Sean.
And I'm Samantha.
And I'm one half of Fell in Love with a Girl, an FC St. Pauli podcast, 7,000 kilometers removed. We can be found on Twitter at With a Girl Pod. We can be found on Instagram under the same name. If you search us on iTunes, it's Fell in Love with a Girl Podcast, all one word. Or sorry, Fell in Love with a Girl space podcast on iTunes. And we always have our latest episode pinned to the top of our Twitter feed. So if anyone hasn't found us, that's where to find us.
And I know in Canada, at least, if you look for FCSP on iTunes, that will also bring up our episodes.
I don't know.
Of course, the Millerntons comes ahead of us.
Of course.
But at least we're on the same page.
You guys have a bit of a head start on us, so, you know, a little easier to find. Okay. As to why we started a podcast, I'm a voracious consumer of podcasts, and when I decided to put my heart and soul into St. Pauli, I went looking for a St. Pauli podcast, and there was the Millerntons, but there was nothing in English, and so I decided, well, that can't be right. I mean, this one of the most popular clubs in the world. What the heck? I'll try my hand at podcasting. And so one day we watched a match two seasons ago near the end of the season, and we watched it together in bed. And then I left the room and I came back with my iPad and tried recording off of GarageBand, and that didn't go well. With no microphone, no preparation whatsoever, I kind of ambushed Samantha.
Guerrilla podcasting is not necessarily a good thing.
No, it takes a little more planning, a little more forethought. It's not as intuitive as one might think. So that's kind of how it all started out, and it's evolved a little bit from there. But there's still lots of growing to be done.
Mm-hmm. So this is now the second season of your podcast, right?
Yeah, we did a full season last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we started third match day in, so we technically now have celebrated our first birthday.
Yeah,
very cool. Okay, in front of this podcast, we discussed what we are going to talk about. And I cut it a little down to some main points because I don't want to take much more time with this special episode than with the usual ones. So okay. Let's start with looking back at the four games Sampoli played so far. So what were your highlights and lowlights, and what do you say in general about it?
I would say the highlight was the first match, and everything else has been a bit of a lowlight.
Yeah, I don't think the team has really hit its form that we saw, certainly through the last half of last season. So we know the potential is there, but we aren't seeing those elements come to the forefront. And we do have the core of the team from last year, I think, which is kind of a byproduct of us performing poorly in the first half, but it kind of kept us under everyone's transfer window radar, and we were lucky enough to keep the vast majority of our players, but add a couple of significant additions as well. So I think our form so far, I speak for myself here, Samantha probably feels a little differently. I don't think we're performing quite to our potential just yet. We aren't firing on all cylinders.
I would agree with that. It feels for me that some of our players haven't settled into their positions and the new scheme of things. And I'm saying that particularly about Alagui and Buhudu's, where I feel like Buhudu's is out of sorts with his new number and he hasn't quite figured out his role yet.
Even though he's playing exactly the same role that he was last year, he's just wearing a different number. And I think that's gotten into his head.
I think you're quite right.
Well, what do you think so far? What are your feelings on the matter?
Okay, one highlight was, of course, also the last-minute goal of Flum in the last match. That was like, I mean, those are moments that you live for as a football fan. Like this yeah. total getting wild and totally getting crazy. But yeah, in general, I would say the performance is okay. There are a lot of moments where you can say, okay, there's a main idea behind it, but it hasn't come to a routine so far. So, but I think that the problem is that, we were playing with the 4-4-2 this year, not with a single front player. Mm-hmm. And I think what most people don't see is that maybe Buadus and Alagui are not only there for making goals. Of course they are, they're as foreign players, but they're also the roles also to put the defenders on them, and then to make room for the midfielders like Buchtmann.
Yes.
And that worked so well in that first match of the season where Buchtmann looked like he was on fire, but he was only able to do that because, you're right, those front two gave him all the space that he needed.
Yeah. But of course it would be great if they also would play as a team and maybe play balls or play good passes to each other. So that they can also play a good role in the offense.
One of the things that I find really frustrating, and as someone who spent a bit of time as a goalkeeper, not nearly playing anywhere close to anything above a pub level team, but what I'm finding really frustrating is last season we had so much success with playing those long balls and counterattacking from the opposition's mistakes. And we're playing really short balls out of the back, and I don't understand why. Like, I get that has a greater element of control, but it takes away from our strengths, which is our speed, especially on either wings with Mats Møller Daly and Cenk Şahin. I don't think they're given the tools that they need to do their jobs. They're both spectacular players, and it's good to see Şahin starting again in the last match. But it's frustrating to see them not given the tools that I think they need to perform at their best.
Mm. Yeah, Shaheen was quite in the second row the last games, because we're lucky in the positions in the midfield, so it's like it's not really a big problem, because the problem is to choose which one of the good ones to set on the field.
Well, it's like our goalkeepers. We have an embarrassment of riches in the midfield. We have so many strong players, just like we do in the goalkeeping position, and we are lucky to have that choice. Depth is amazing in the midfield right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about the goalkeepers later. Yes, but what do you think for the whole season? Will we end up somewhere in the middle? Will we struggle to get delegated, or will we be struggling to be relegated, or what do you think? I think you talked about this in the last episode already of your podcast, and if I would try to sum this up, that Sean said that he wants to play at the top level but don't get promoted. And Samantha is more like in the midfield relaxation section.
I would really like to see us in that comfy middle section. And if we continue to play that we have been playing for the last few matches, I think that's where we'll end up staying. I think perhaps if we started firing on all cylinders like we did with the first match, we might end up, you know, in that promotion area that Sean would favor.
I don't want to see us promoted to Bundesliga, simply because then the commercial constraints and kind of take over the day-to-day business of the club. And I think we have to play by the top tier rules. And I think our sweet spot is in the second division, where we can be St. Pauli. We can spread the word. We can spread the message. We're accessible to new supporters, but we're not struggling to stay afloat. And that's a concern of mine.
So if I ask you, on which place do you want to fight, end up in the end?
I think anywhere between third and missing out on the promotion playoff and fifth.
Okay, but then we have the same problem that we had like in the season of 15 and 16.
Yeah,
all the good players will be gone to the teams that got promoted or already play in first division.
See, that's why my idea is the better one.
it's true. Yeah, we have to take some chances. If we are successful, that is definitely a risk. But I'm sure we would be able to rebuild. It wouldn't be my favorite thing in the world to do. I think we have a fantastic core of players. But to ask professional footballers to not try their hardest or not strive for success is counterproductive. I think they're going to be successful this season. We'll just have to deal with the ramifications when they come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was just going to say, now we have to throw it back on you of where do you want to see our team, and where do you think that they're going to end up?
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Samantha. I would just want a complete, cozy season with like totally in the midfield. I want to win the games, but I still want to be in a cozy midfield. Just that the newspapers don't go with like, oh, St. Pauli the next candidate to be promoted or something, which was kind of the titles before the season. Due to the amazing second half of the last season we played, and I don't want this hype. I just wanted a little more smooth. So
Yeah, it was a roller coaster last season, to be sure.
Having
been around the club for as long as you have, what is better, missing out on relegation or promotion?
That's a good question.
Sorry to bug you with that.
If you play the relegation, you want to win it. So missing that opportunity is like, it's a 50-50 chance, you know? And I don't know. Missing the promotion is just, I mean, for me, myself, it's not the main idea for the club. I don't go to the games to see them getting promoted one day. That's not the main idea behind. Of course, I would celebrate it if they do, but the last times have shown that you end up in a year of tears and getting delegated again. So that's not my main wish for the club. I want them to be like top 10, top 7, top 5 in general, but maybe, hopefully without the losses we had in the last years, whether the good players like Bartels or Cruiser left the club and then went to higher clubs.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like we're all kind of on the same page. We're all happy to be in second Bundesliga.
Yes, so. Of course. I don't want a third league.
Yeah. Oh, that was terrifying. Because I really worried about the accessibility to new supporters and even established supporters. I mean, trying to track down any information on St. Pauli would be limited to, I think, the English language website. Subscribing to FC St. Pauli .tv, and that's about it. Podcasts. I mean, I think that would be the only way people would stumble upon us. And I think we're in a great age of growth and expansion for the supporter base. So I think it would be a shame to lose that momentum.
Yeah. Yeah, the only good thing would be that we would be able to see some new grounds, like on some small villages and stuff. But nobody wants the third league in general.
No.
Okay, you already mentioned the goalkeepers. With we also not only changed the coach, we also changed the number one goalkeeper back to Himmelmann. What is your what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I have a feeling my answer will be rather longer, so I'll let Samantha go first.
Okay.
See, and I was going to just defer to you because I kind of feel the same way. I really like Hiervagen. I like him a lot for, and not just because of his skills, his goalkeeping skills. I really like what I see from him from a social media aspect of his involvement with Viva Con Agua. And not saying that Himmelmann doesn't, we just don't have the opportunity to see it from where we sit. So, but I do think Hiervagen, to me, would have been the better choice. Mm-hmm.
I think we are very spoiled to have the choice between Himmelmann and Hiervagen. Hirvi is my guy. He's my favorite player on the side right now, even though we don't see very much. And the one opportunity we have had to see him was during that disastrous Pokal match. I, like Samantha, really love how involved he is with the social aspects of the club and the core values of the club. I think he, if he had started this year, I think would have. I think he just really embraces the core values, and I don't want to invoke the name of Fabian Boll, but I think he would be a legend like Boll.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But which is, I know, those are very, very big boots to step into, mm-hmm. because he's such a beloved player and now that he's with the second team, a manager, and I'm glad he's still with the club. I hope that in the upcoming winter transfer window that we don't lose him. I hope he doesn't ask for a transfer for a starting position. But he's at the same time a professional footballer. I would be absolutely heartbroken to see him leave the club, but I think that's something that I have to be prepared for. It would be a shame to lose him because he is so valuable.
Yeah, totally.
As an ambassador of the club.
Yeah. I mean, the coach said that it was not a decision against Herwagen, but it was for Himmelmann. So both of them were quite close as far as their power is concerned. And I think you can put Herwagen on the bench because, I mean, he's in his early 30s. This is probably the last bigger club he can play in. And you can't put him then on the bench another half season or a full season, because he would definitely, which is his total right as a professional football player, he would go search for another club.
Mm-hmm.
Concerned that he's not that old, and has high perspective.
Yeah, it's a balancing act, as it always is with any sporting professionals, trying to keep everyone happy despite less than ideal circumstances. Himmelmann is a very strong keeper, and I'm not sad to see him between the sticks. I think positionally, Herwagen is incredibly sound. He tends to hold the ball rather than Himmelmann has more of a tendency to punch it. But Himmelmann also has a longer kick, which is ironic since Janssen seems to have dictated a direction where we are playing very short balls from the back rather than the long balls forward.
Yeah, the long balls by Herwagen was kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say messy, but they didn't reach the goals they were heading to so well. So, you said, they are totally different kinds of players.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We can compare and contrast. They're not cut from the same cloth, although they're both of fantastic quality.
Mm-hmm. And I feel that keepers like a good scotch get better with age, and I think Herwagen is in kind of that age where he's really going to start to I would say like clean up his act a little bit and maybe do a little bit better, whereas to me Himmelmann still needs to age a little bit, get a little bit I don't want to say experience because I don't want him necessarily to be first, but like just kind of I feel we need to take more time with Himmelmann, and I would prefer to see Herwagen between the sticks because I think he's got that maturity and that, you know, that kind of aged goalkeeper feel.
Yeah, but you can't let a keeper like Himmelmann age on the bench. So
no, it's
and
true.
That's it. Like, it's hard. If we could meld those two together, they would be the perfect.
We would have the perfect goalkeeper. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and then they probably wouldn't play it for us, but that, you know, but they would be the perfect goalkeeper. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't want any players to get injured, but last season worked out really, really well for us. We had the ability to go to the bench and bring out Herwagen, and who knows, Himmelmann's not bulletproof. I don't want him to get hurt, but if he does, if something happens, we know we have a very strong option sitting on the bench.
Yeah. So we are, like you said, we are very spoiled in this situation.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Remaining on the player side, you asked about the favorite player beforehand. Did you mean for the club in itself, or the everything around it, or for the game right now?
I had come up with that question, and I was thinking kind of everything together, because it takes both your playing and your social side to be the perfect player. So,
yeah. We went to New York to watch the last game of last season with the New York St. Pauli Supporters Club, mm-hmm. at the East River Bar. And two nights before the match, we sat down, we had a chat with them, and we asked who would you be most devastated if they left the club. And I was surprised by the answer. A lot of people answered Schnecke.
Because
he's been a good servant to the club, which took me a little bit by surprise, but not really by surprise. He's certainly not the most glamorous player, but he is through and through St. Pauli.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant where the question is heading. So you have this old players in the staff. But you also have the kind of new ones like Merle Dali, Shaheen, Buadus, that made a huge impact on the sports side in the last seasons. So for the all time favorite, I will also vote for Schnecke, and for the current staff, I would say Merle Dali. I can't name only one for the general question.
That's fair.
And what is it that you like about Daly?
His ability to keep the ball. I mean, he can get the ball from whatever position, whatever height, and he takes it right on his foot and can move with it and pass it forward and makes a huge impact on the midfield section. That's my main idea.
So I think everybody knows my favorite, because I can't help myself. I do. I really like Christopher Buchmann for current squad. I think I like it when a player wears a little bit of emotion on their face, and Buchmann does that from time to time. I also do quite like some of his set pieces, although St. Pauli's set pieces need some work. And I just feel like I don't know. To me, he's just like good old reliable, and he can occasionally break out of his shell and do some amazing things, and that's why I like him.
Mm-hmm. Sean?
Even though he's on the bench, I don't think I'm going to surprise anybody who's ever listened to our podcast. Philip Hiervagen is absolutely my favorite player. I really do admire him as a possession goalkeeper. The ability to read the play and be in the right position 99% of the time. I think he's a fantastic keeper, and the social aspect definitely plays into it. But even as a player, I hold him in incredibly high regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I don't know if he finishes his sporting career. Maybe we will see him off the field in some position.
Maybe I would love this.
Maybe he will be the new goalkeeper coach or something.
Yeah. I could see that for sure, and I think he's very professional in how he's handled being put on the bench, and he's got his head down, he's doing what he needs to do, and I think he's St. Pauli through and through, very much like Schnecke.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then another section that we wanted to talk about is I called it the stadium and its fans, so that if it's four different size or sections, or if it's one hell altogether.
Well, there is something of we haven't been to the Millern Tour, although we certainly plan on going If we're lucky this spring, we're hoping to see the last home fixture if we can. But having read Nick Davidson's fantastic book, Pirates, Punks, and Politics, he does talk about the tension that exists between the Sud Curve and the Gegengerade. And of course, the cameras are on the Gegengerade, pointing at the Haupttribune, which is usually pretty quiet. It doesn't show terribly well on television. What is the current relationship between the supporters on the Gegengerade and the Sud Curve? Because I know that has had some tension between the two sections before.
Yeah, I mean, last Saturday that was the 15th anniversary of USP, Ultra St. Pauli. And some of them spoke on the stage, and they always talked about like stuff like, in those 15 years, they never were comfortable. They were always those ones who put the finger in the wounds and put up some discussions. So of course there are fans on the Gegengerade that are not quite fine with USP because they always go a little bit over the top sometimes. But recently there was a group of fans from three different sections, from the Nordkurve, from Gegengerade and Südkurve, that were together for quite some time. They were also responsible, for example, for the choreo with the 9,000 flags in August last year against Braunschweig, where the whole stadium was waving flags in brown and white. And now they formed a registered society, Das Ganze Stadion e.V., where you can participate and organize choreos for the whole stadium. So there is some effort in bringing together the whole stadium to work together, to connect, to socialize. But all the three of the four sides have their main groups already, like Nord Support, Ostblock, and like I said, USP. So yeah, I think every section does it just stuff on its own, but there is effort to work together more and more.
Well, that sounds incredibly positive.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I wish all the sections the very best moving forward, because that sounds like a really interesting initiative, and I hope it brings everyone together. One question though is, why is there lower attendance on the Haupttribune? Is it just because it's more of the, is it touristy? Is it corporate? Is it, why do we see so many empty seats on the Haupttribune?
I think it's a mixture of everything. You have the companies that invite the business partners to matches, and that they don't see the need in being on their seat for the first minute or the first minute after the break. Me myself, I've never been to the Haupttribune so far. I've seen all the sections, but not the Haupttribune. So I don't can speak from personal experience. But of course, there those are the seats where the money sits, so to speak. I think it's a mixture. You have the older people that don't have so much. Not to say power, but not so much effort and they just want to see the game
and sit in a comfy chair and
right.
Gotcha. I do apologize for my mispronunciation.
But I don't want to blame all the all the people on the Haupttribüne. I'm sure there are people that still go there, like since 50, 60 years, I don't know, and still love the club like they did on the first day. I don't want to blame all of them.
No, and it's always dangerous to try and paint any group of people with one brush, because that's not fair or in all cases correct either. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious, because we don't get a ton of information about the four sections.
I find it interesting though that you've sat on three out of the four sides. So why haven't you had the opportunity or chosen not to sit on the Haupttribüne side? Oh my gosh, I'm learning my German from Sean.
It's fine. I'm just only living in Hamburg since June, so Gegengrade was the first opportunity to get tickets for as a fan from outside. And also last year I had a season package for Nordkurve, which was like 17 single tickets in one block. And this year I have my first Jahreskarte for the Südkurve. So it was always the ability for me to get tickets that made me choose my section. And honestly, the Haupttribüne was never a question so far.
Okay. That's understandable. I touched on it a little earlier. What about the growth of St. Pauli internationally? Are you seeing more tourists coming to the Millantor? And are they diluting the experience at all?
I can't answer that in one sentence. Of course, you have like many different languages when you walk around the stadium outside. You have people coming over from England, from Scotland, wherever. That take going to the Millantor as part of their Hamburg experience, or maybe that maybe even the Millantor is the main reason why they come to Hamburg. That's, they also have those people. On the Gegengrade, I think you have sections where you have this event fans, because like I said, this is one of the sections where you can get tickets more easily. Also from the dealers in front of the stadium, that like go with their selfie stick and make photos all the time. I can get that many people get annoyed by those people who don't get the right feeling for the place. But on Südkurve, I'm quite fine right now. I'm standing quite close to the ultra section, and you don't have these event fans there, as far as I can say. Could be that I remember last year in Pokal against Mönchengladbach, I think. You also saw people in Mönchengladbach jerseys on the Südkurve side, and that this is quite a...
Really?
Yes.
How... Okay. Interesting.
I don't know.
Okay, I have a follow-up.
There are many, many ways to get tickets for St. Pauli, so...
Okay.
I don't know, but I don't get it either.
Yeah, I'm curious, because we've also traveled to Portland to mm-hmm. see Portland Timbers play, and there's certainly an overlap of the two clubs' values and worldview, and there is a sign right on the north stand where Timbers Army reside, is if you are wearing away colors, or even Samantha and I witnessed a gentleman wearing an LA Dodgers t-shirt to an LA Galaxy match against Timbers, and he was told he wouldn't be permitted on the North End because he was wearing something other than either something unbranded or something not in direct. He wasn't wearing Timbers gear or just a plain T-shirt. Mm-hmm. So he was asked to relocate. And that's not the case at the Millen Tour?
I mean, we started this this forbidding of foreign colors in this very difficult part of the season last year, when we were like at the bottom of the ladder at the end of 2016. Then we stopped allowing other colors in the sections, because there was some incident with fans of Stuttgart that were sitting in the business seats upon the Südkurve, and we all know we also lost this game, and there was some incident between fans in Südkurve down there and some businessmen from Stuttgart upon. Like with some arguing, and I don't know if it went to fist fights, but I don't know. It was not a good incident. So after that, they decided to keep foreign colors out of the stadium for this particular time. But I don't know if it's allowed again. But around the stadium, you can see the jerseys from other clubs as well. So
I find that fascinating, because I always thought across all European football and all leagues that unless you're in the away section, you weren't allowed to wear away colors.
Yeah, I'm just very surprised by that as well.
Yeah,
I mean, it always depends on how you behave in it, you know. If you have like a seat ticket for Gegengrade or for Nordkurve, especially for also the seats upon the home section of Nordkurve, you can sit there, you can enjoy the game, and if your team makes a goal, you make the fist in the pocket, you know, and don't jump up and cheer and don't know like you were at home or something.
Yeah.
So
as far as
this goes, it's tolerated in the stadium. So,
some friends of ours who reside in Germany had to settle for home tickets at a Sandhausen match last season, and they had to comport themselves very, very carefully in the non-away section. But there was subtle touches of Sankt Pauli colors, but yeah, they couldn't cheer, they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they still wore technically, because I think they wore like brown jeans and a white shirt or something, but they didn't.
They weren't wearing shirts and scarves. And,
no.
Yeah, all right. You can't speak for the. For the whole section, there will always be people that can tolerate this. There will always be people that make some arguing about it. I don't know. But your question concerning the fans also included like fan clubs and the whole thing getting bigger and bigger, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in this past couple of years, we've seen an explosion of supporters internationally, and that's from the official side included a US-based fan shop, so we don't have to pay exorbitant DHL bills. Mm-hmm. from Germany, and an English language version of the official club website with news in English. What do you attribute that to? Because it's been, I think, a very sudden embracing of a larger and more international supporter base.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one reason could be that we have Under Armour as our sponsor for the kits, which is US based. So maybe they I won't say forced, but talked with the St. Pauli officials if they want to take more part in the US section, maybe. As far as they're also a sponsor from the US. And I think it's always this you have to decide which commercial stuff you go with and which stuff you don't do, you know? Like not selling the stadium name, not having the next corner kick presented by the sponsor X or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that turning into the US market is a thing everyone can deal with, which is so you don't go too far into regions you don't want to go. And I think really Under Armour has a huge impact on that.
What do you think a typical St. Pauli fan thinks of all of these international fan clubs popping up every 5 minutes?
What is typical? I mean, I think you can ask 10 fans and some will say, I don't care. Some will say, go away, St. Pauli is Hamburg. And some will say, yes, it's cool. So I think the range within the fan scene is quite wide. Speaking for myself, I would say, I mean, this was always, at least in the last couple of years, that was part, like, that St. Pauli shows up, I don't know, on beaches all over the world, in city centers all over the world. This was always part of this movement in the last years. So I don't know. As long as those fan clubs take the same spirit and the same attitude into the world that St. Pauli stands for, I'm fine with that.
Do you think this rising wave of right-wing politics around the world has contributed to that? Because we do see south of us that thing that occupies the White House at the moment. I dare not call him a president. The current regime in the United Kingdom. We've seen a hard-fought election battle in France.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people are just looking for a sporting entity that embraces more than just sports itself? Do you think that factors in at all?
Never thought about that. So you mean that they don't think, okay, I want to see football, but I also want to make a political statement as well?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Maybe, could be some of them, of course, but like I said, when they feel left-winged and have the against homophobia, against racism and all that, of course this can be a reason why they say, okay, we don't support any US team or any team in our country, but we support St. Pauli now. I mean, this is what you always hear when Yorkshire St. Pauli, for example, they mm-hmm. have a huge they spend huge effort in social work and make fundraisers and stuff. So I think you have to be a political person to decide to be part of a St. Pauli fan club somewhere in the world. I wouldn't say that every St. Pauli fan is political, but to decide to be a St. Pauli fan somewhere in the world, I would say that you at least have to have political interest.
I'll be honest. Yesterday, Samantha and I went to the Calgary Pride Parade, and I felt extra proud because I got to fly a rainbow St. Pauli flag. We came across a group of religious protesters in opposition of the Pride Parade, and the St. Pauli flag was a perfect size to cover up some of their hateful messages on their banners. Uh-huh. And that's not something you see in every sporting club. And I think it's something that makes St. Pauli very special and very different from the vast majority of what's out there right now. I mean, you have a player like Colin Kaepernick in the NFL right now who's being blacklisted from playing for anybody because no one wants to touch him because he's this political hot potato because he has the temerity to take a knee during the singing of the national anthem to protest
the
Black Lives Matter movement. So I think that plays a certain amount into it. I mean, it is a football club, but it is also an overt political choice. And I'm proud to be able to say I support St. Pauli because of the politics, and it's not always the product that's on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another club in the world that has a pride flag available in the fan shop.
No. Well, and every other team that I can think of, whether it's football or North American pointy throw ball or anything like or hockey, they'll have maybe one day a year where they put on rainbow laces or put on a pride patch and say that we're against homophobia.
But it's every day at the Millern Tor.
Every day at the Millern Tor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there are other clubs. I don't want to say that St. Pauli is unique in that respect, but I mean, St. Pauli has probably been doing it as long or maybe longer than anybody else. And I think that's important. That's a huge part of our identity, both as St. Pauli supporters and people.
Yeah, you always get regarded as some kind of pioneer in this section, of course. Okay, as soon as we are already talking about politics and looking on the time we are recording right now, I would finish the club St. Pauli section and move on to G20 and St. Pauli in general, because you also had some questions on that as well.
Yes.
So we heard bits and pieces of, you know, the Millern Tor opening up their doors for protesters and we saw Eva Leenan do a little bit of protesting and encouraging peaceful protesting. But we're really curious of how G20 went from somebody living in Hamburg's kind of perspective. And like, if did that protesting make a difference, do you think?
First of all, it depends on the form of protest. Of course, the huge presence by people in the city, showing solidarity to the people in the demonstrations, at least especially the left wing demonstrations. This was a huge sign that the whole city is against this what is going on in the city and especially against how the police went in those days. But of course, this blind vandalism, like firing up cars from normal workers, that's no question that this is not the form of protest that can make any positive impact.
I was shocked from footage that I saw on both sides of things. The first would be the use of force by police in Hamburg. responding to protesters. Literally, I saw footage of one police service member just walk up to a protester and punch them square in the face, mm-hmm. With little to no provocation, other than just standing there. And then on the other hand, you see footage. I think it was actually Kala who posted to Instagram driving down the street, and there are cars on fire, and it's clearly not the product of the police. It's the other side of the spectrum, more of the black bloc anarchist sort of protesters. Where could the balance have been better struck? Was there any way of mellowing that at all, or is that just the product of putting G20 in such a city as Hamburg?
As far as I'm concerned, G20 shouldn't have taken place here in the first place. If you put some event like this into a city, then you have to not only take care for all the politicians that come to Hamburg from all over the world, but you also have to take care for the inhabitants. And some pictures you see where the, I don't know if you can speak of the black bloc always all the time, but people dressed in black, like vandalizing or going with vandalism through the streets, setting cars on fire. You see no police anywhere. No, nowhere. Just they can go there for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes without any harm. But on the other hand, you have like this complete street blocks protected area for politicians where no cars can go, where no people can go without getting checked on small occasions. And this was a total disaster, so to say.
A G20 conference is not something I would wish on my worst enemy, let alone our friends in Hamburg. It was very sad to see some of the blatant destruction of private property by hooligans and vandals. And I hope that everyone who was affected has recovered or is in a process of healthy recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the main problem is, it's quite some weeks ago now, but the effect that you see from, of course, especially those heavy protests, is that the police, the presence of the police on demonstrations, on huge events. Of course, it's also due to the fact that we have terroristic attacks in Germany as well. But of course, G20 made the way clear for this huge presence with like machine guns and special gear and stuff.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that.
Well, and as you alluded to just briefly recently, of saying, like, surprise, surprise, of course this is going to happen when you put G20 in Hamburg. Like, it was such an interesting city choice.
Yeah, a massive mistake, I think.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, totally.
Do you think the alternative media center that was run out of the Millerntor had a positive effect? Was that an experiment worth repeating in the future for similar events?
Totally. I think especially when you see in the oldest this footage from the protests around G20, where also journalists were attacked by the police, where journalistic badges were had no rules, had no meaning for the policeman. I mean, there was this one dialogue where the journalist was showing him his badge, and the policeman said, "I don't care," and hit him in the face. So,
I think while our relationship with our police services in Canada are not always the healthiest, I've never seen anything quite like that before. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, by the time we get there, which will be spring, hopefully all the rebuilding from G20 will have occurred. What should we be expecting for our first visit to the beautiful city of Hamburg, and specifically the district of St. Pauli?
Yeah, I mean, you asked me for one thing that you have to do when you're here. Mm-hmm. I mean, despite that you visit the Millentor and of course go to Jolly Roger for a beer, I think. For me, it's always the greatest moments when I can only sit at some place not so crowded in the harbor at nighttime and watch the lights of the harbor with a beer and some good friends, and then that's like the That is my special moment that you should explore here. But of course you can do the whole touristic stuff like Reeperbahn, a harbor tour. But I mean, you can only walk around in St. Pauli and explore the small shops and bars. There is this small bistro where the ultras always used to get their snacks before the games or after the games and celebrate, and which is called Kleine Pause. Just walk around, talk to the people, and explore the city on your own foot. You know, everything is reachable on foot in Hamburg, at least the city center part, and just explore it by yourself, and don't walk around with a map and get yourself told where to go and where not to go.
Okay, fair enough. Well, the quiet night on the edge of the harbor, watching lights with a beer, sounds like an amazing suggestion, and that's definitely my speed.
Oh yeah, beer and friends. You cannot go wrong with a beer and friends.
Yeah, exactly. And a little piece of quiet.
Yeah,
and harbor lights.
And harbor lights.
Yeah, so that would be the things I would recommend.
We certainly appreciate that.
And of course, if you're here, just let me know, and we can also explore some parts of the city together.
Well, we will take you up on that offer, absolutely.
We appreciate especially it. Since we don't think we're going to learn German.
Well, you've heard my German pronunciation, so you know it's not fantastic.
I can order food.
Yeah, I think most of the people in Hamburg are fine with English as well. So,
excellent.
Okay.
So our last quick topic, since we've been doing this for quite some time,
been very generous with your time.
Absolutely. So we are this young podcast that has managed to celebrate 1 year of podcasting. And the Millerton has been around for much longer than that. So what do you think is the one thing we should do as a young podcast to continue to grow and to stay vibrant?
I would say that you just have to stay in touch with the world, as you already do, and you do right now. So you will be published and on the German page of the Millerton, and can spread your word there. You will have time for famous last words later. what's always important for me is to get to know the people in person. Also, like when you made your trip to New York, and then you went to Portland, and I mean, of course, the accessibility for you is much harder than for me. But as we are talking about the favorite moments in the podcast, it was always for me when I could meet the persons I talked to or the other people that listen to our podcast in person, so that can both of us step out of anonymity and get to know each other, if it's at least just for a beer and some small talk about football. It's always nice that, you know, without behind all those Twitter accounts around the world with FCSP in their bio, that there are actual people behind it and nice people, and that it's worth getting in touch with in person.
I couldn't agree more with you. We were actually just talking the other day about how fortunate we've been in just this short period of time that we've been running this podcast, which is very much a labor of love, but getting to meet all these fantastic people in the United States and from Germany and having conversations when they see the Totenkopf or the regular club logo, and being able to find that common ground and getting to know people better. It's an amazing experience, and it really makes the world a much, much smaller place and makes it so much easier to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And I think we could all benefit from something like that in our lives.
Totally. Okay, so Now is your time for famous last words. What do you want to say before we finish this huge, huge episode of Millenturn?
I think thank you so much for taking the time and reaching out to us and offering to collaborate with us, because this has been a really wonderful experience, and I hope it's not the last time that we do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I'm always open for collaboration, and maybe one day my steps will lead me into Canada, and then I don't know.
If you're ever here, you let us know.
I will.
Excellent.
Okay, then let me also thank you for being my guest, and let's hope that the upcoming season will be fine for all of us, without losing our favorite players, without struggling to be delegated. And yeah, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you.